Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
Hello, amicable divorcing listeners. I have an announcement. This is the beginning of the third year of this podcast. And through this podcast, it's been my goal to help you divorce with the greatest of ease. As we embark on the third year of the show, the name of the podcast is now changed to The Amicable Divorce Expert and references a little more of my past in providing guidance, help, and insight into making your divorce and co-parenting relationship as amicable as possible. For this launch episode, we're flipping the switch. Interviewing me is Tracy DeForge, acclaimed guru of business development in both the broadcast and podcast worlds for about 8 million years. And Tracy, I have to tell you, you do look good for 8 million years in business. And founder and CEO of Produce Your Own Podcast, a company designed to assist others in creating successful podcasts, of which I am a member and have been for a year, and it's been wonderful. I have learned a lot. Thank you, Tracy, for that. Lastly, Tracy's host of her own podcast, Journey to There, a place for women to share career and life fulfillment by exploring the intersection between personal and business growth. Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce Tracy DeForge.
And ladies and gentlemen, I have the pleasure of introducing the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel. I'm so happy to be here with you today.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you for inviting me.
To your own show. Okay, well, let's get this party started because I, like so many of your listeners, are so curious to know more about the amicable divorce expert and just about who you are and so many interesting and fascinating things about Judith Weigel. So it is the second year anniversary of your podcast, Amicable Divorce Expert, formerly known as Constructive Uncoupling. In fact, the launch of your rebrand to Amicable Divorce Expert is today. Why did you change the name?
I liked Constructive Uncoupling. It didn't feel as specific and unique as I really wanted it to be. And anybody who goes into broadcast, podcast, public speaking, anything like that, eventually evolves into their own space and really delineates what they do the best. And we all have our skills and talents, and over time, we hone them to a point where, aha, this is where I can really make an impact in people's lives. So in the divorce business, we all throw around the word amicable a lot, and that being the opposite of litigious. Everybody wants amicable. Nobody wants to be litigious. That's not anybody's goal. But it's really hard to be amicable. I mean, we can teach the law, but here's what we can't, what most people cannot teach, and it's what I really think I do the best, and I love it, and I get response from my clients, and that is I give human and communication advice before anything, because you have to calm down when you're going through divorce in order to make decisions that work for you and in order to grow from the experience of being divorced. So I love the word amicable, and I talk about it every day, all day, to all of my clients. And I guess if there's going to be a unique selling point about what I do in comparison to all other mediators, all other paralegals who file for divorce, and all other podcasters who deal in divorce podcasts, I think that might be my bailiwick, is to show you really how to be amicable.
Well, and I love what you said about there's amicable or there's litigious, and nobody wants litigious. And but having the skill set that you provide your clients to really help them truly be amicable is a powerful trait and just an excellent gift that you can give to your clients. It's something that can be life-changing for them during a very difficult time. And obviously, the podcast is about divorce. Were you a child of divorce? Have you ever been divorced? Did you want to be a family law attorney and somehow ended up as a podcaster?
Yes, no, and yes. So in order, I am not a child of divorce,
but I
was almost a child of divorce. Growing up in the 50s and early 60s, because Tracy, I am ancient. So growing up in the 50s and 60s, it was a very blissful era. But women of the 50s, parents, mothers of the 50s, were very troubled. And therapy was not part of the lexicon in the 50s. You really had to be insanely mentally ill in order to go to a therapist or talk about going to a therapist. Yet, it was a bridge decade where a lot of women were educated, went to college, but still were in the old cultural mode of raising a family, having children. And so they were wife and mother. I think my mom really did need to go to work. And I think because she was in that old cultural mold, she didn't. And I think that caused her great difficulties. Plus, there are a lot of people that are walking around with personality disorders. This is one of the episodes, by the way, one of the topics that gets a lot of downloads when I talk about personality disorders, because so many people have them, either full-blown or just a little bit. And so I remember my dad coming to my sister and myself when we were teenagers and saying, I think I need a divorce. And I lost it. I absolutely lost it. I just didn't want my parents to get divorced, even though I knew it was a struggle for my dad. And he hung in there. He hung in there until he passed away in the 70s. And I cannot tell you how much I appreciated it, but I wondered if the stress caused an early death. I mean that. I mean, this sounds like a little bit of a downer, but it's life. I mean, we've just...
No, it is. You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're living with that stuffing all of that internal emotion and stress and not living your authentic life, which is such a phrase used so much today that it can be cliche, but I think you're absolutely right. If you're not being congruent to your life and your goals, it can literally eat you away on the inside.
Yeah, it really... Yes. And so I appreciated that my dad stayed in the marriage, and I also, you know, just have that lingering. I wonder, but you know what? He was a wonderful man. He was a saint to me, and I'm lucky to have him as my dad. I also learned a lot from my mom, though, and I don't want to, you know, make that any less of an effect on my life, because she was also a very great woman. But so, no, I wasn't a child of divorce, almost. Yes, I have been divorced. And I honestly think the fact that it was amicable yet enormously sad, saddest year of my life, and I have shared with listeners in different episodes dealing with certain topics, I've shared my journey through divorce, and I think this makes me compassionate and empathetic because I can bring myself right back to that year. So there were no issues of money. We made the same amount of money. We had no children. We had no assets to fight over, no debt to deal with. But it's still sad. I think it was the right thing to do. I don't have any lingering doubt that it was the right thing to do. And even when you know that you're doing the right thing, it doesn't lessen the impact, the sadness, because it's a life change. Not only is it an identity change, married to single, and why? And then you almost feel like you have to justify why you're getting divorced. That's what a lot of people go through. So yes, I can always bring myself back to the feeling I had that year and what I did to keep myself together, still working. I was in the middle of a new career in entertainment in Los Angeles, and I had to be focused. I had clients I had to attend to. And I do remember that I would go home at night. I am not the person to talk to everybody under the sun about my troubles. I was always silent, and I went home and processed to myself and then got up the next day and worked. I exercised a lot. So I know the value of self-care and how important it is to do that when you're going through divorce, because you have a lot on your plate. You do.
Yes, I know when I went through a divorce, it was amicable as well. I always say it was the best case of a worst case scenario. And but one piece of advice I was given that I've never forgotten is that you have to grieve the loss of the relationship you thought it was going to be. So
that's excellent.
And I've just never forgotten that. And it's because it is a loss, even though it's amicable. You still have to grieve what it was that you dreamed that it was going to be, because it's not turning out the way that you thought, and allowing yourself to go through that grieving process. So, and
you are completely right. You really are right. And I know people come to my office for either mediation or filing, and I work with both spouses, which is way more difficult than an attorney working with one person only. And I'm going to address what did I want to do legally in a minute. If you haven't gone through the emotional divorce first, which means you've decided to separate, and then you go through a year or two of just kind of living apart, living in that new headspace, going through the 7 stages of grief. When people die, there's 5 stages of grief. When you get divorced, there's 7 stages of grief.
Oh, wow.
Especially if you're co-parenting, you have to still be connected to that other spouse. So there's a lot going on in the grieving stages of divorce. And if you allow time to be your healer and you really get busy on processing the cultural impact, the familial impact, the religious impact, the social impact, and the legal and financial impact of getting divorced, then you can engage in the legal divorce. And so this brings me to the third part of your question, and that was, did you ever want to be an attorney? Well, you know, I was a debater in high school, and I loved oral argument a lot. And so attorneys fascinated me, but I actually took the LSAT, which is the legal SATs.
Right.
I was always working in entertainment once I graduated from college. So happily in the business end of entertainment. At one point in the early 90s, I was in Los Angeles, and this is a thriving legal community here, as well as a thriving entertainment community and media community. But I thought, you know what? I think it's interesting to be an attorney. Let me go take the LSAT and see if I qualify to get into law school. And I took the LSAT like we took our SATs in high school. In my age category, which is the late 60s, nobody studied for it. You were either good at math and English or you weren't. If you weren't good at math and English, you didn't go to college. You went out, you got a job, you worked, you earned your own business, and you were a thriving person. But that if you were good at math and English and you wanted to go into a profession that required a college degree, so you took the SATs. So that's how I took the LSATs. I just signed up, went in, took them. And I actually got a score that would allow me into, I call it the Bullocks-Wilshire Law School. So in Los Angeles, on the west side, we have Westwood. And when I came here, we had stores that we don't have now. We had iMagnon. We don't have that anymore. But we had Bullocks on Wilshire, and it was one of the nicest stores in town, one of the high-grade stores. That building is made into a law school. So I call it the Bullocks-Wilshire Law School for that reason. So I was I was really happy that I got a really good score. And if I chose to go to law school, I could go to not Yale, not Harvard, but a law school, which is fine. I didn't realize till I was watching Legally Blonde, which is one of my favorite five all-time movies. You actually study for the LSATs. People actually studied. I didn't, and I'm so happy I didn't, because here's what I learned taking the LSAT, and here's what I would like to share with people who may be interested in law school. You have to think unlike normal people think. It's not normal to think like a lawyer. It just isn't.
It's a great point.
And I mean no disrespect to lawyers, because I have a ton of them on the show. It's a little convoluted sometimes. And when I was looking at all these examples, if not X, then Y, if not Y, then Z, if not Z, then X and Y, I'm like, no. Life is complicated enough. I can't think like this. But journey to there, life has a way of taking hold of you, doesn't it, Tracy?
It absolutely will guide you in where you're supposed to go if you will listen and pay attention.
That's right.
And I mean, listen to yourself.
Yes. And sometimes you say, what the heck? No. What the heck? No. And then an opportunity just keeps presenting itself to you enough times that you say, okay, stop, wait. What is this? I have no idea. A mediation was presented to me by two female attorneys when I was living in Palm Springs in the early 2000s. I needed to retire early for a while, so I moved to Palm Springs. But I wrote a book, and I really was trying to work, but it felt like retirement. Anyway, two female attorneys came up to me and said, you know, you have a really interesting personality for mediation. You should consider it. And there aren't a lot of women in mediation. It's still mostly men. No idea what it was, didn't care, didn't do anything about it. It wasn't until I was ready to move back to Los Angeles and I'm sitting in a nail salon, which where all major conversations take place between women.
Or your hair salon, but yes, either way.
That's right. So I'm sitting next to this woman who said, third time, you know, you have a really interesting personality for mediation. You should consider it. I said, okay, it's now time for me to ask, what is mediation and why are you saying this? You're the third person. She eventually became the person that I bought the company from that I run now, Divorce Resource, Inc.
I love that story. Again, like we have so many interesting similarities, because I always say if I hear something three times from three different places, that's the universe's way of telling me I need to pay attention to whatever it is. So if three people tell me, different people tell me I need to read this book, or three different people say, it comes at me from different directions. It's the power of three. If I get that message three times from three different places, I'm like, okay, I hear you. This doesn't make any sense to me, but I'll go with it. So,
you know, I love the power of three. And I think I want to share with our listeners the power of three in the decisions coming up to be divorced, maybe. Or not to be divorced, either way. I mean, I'm in the divorce business, but I'm very sensitive to, are you really ready to get divorced now? As I'm listening to people talk sometimes, I'm thinking, maybe not. But yes, that power of three, for anybody that's looking for a new career now, I always say divorce is a new beginning. And let's use it as an opportunity to grow in ways that maybe you've put on the shelf for a while, maybe in ways that you've been a little fearful of. I mean, look, divorce is fearful enough, so go for the fear. Go for broke on fear, you know, just do what you want to do and make this your opportunity to do it. But anyway, that's how I ended up doing this. I started in mediation first, but I thought I was going to do entertainment mediation. So I actually put business cards together, had the name of my company, Backstage Diplomat. It's trademarked, folks, don't use it. But, you know, I called myself the Backstage Diplomat. Because
that is such a great name, and you're so smart for trademarking it.
Oh, absolutely. But you know, in live entertainment, which is my background, in live entertainment, anything can happen before showtime. People can get in arguments, but the show has to go on. And whoever's handling the event, and I was the person handling the entertainment component of an event or a show, I had to get really good at chilling people out backstage and just getting them performance ready. And we can deal with this later. Let's just have a great show now. So I guess I always did a little bit of that. It was adding the legal part that was a challenge to me. So I had to become a paralegal in order to file. When I bought the company in 2012, Divorce Resource Inc., which is how I mediate and file, I had an assistant who knew everything about filing. I knew nothing. She was brilliant. I adored her. We're friends now. She went on to have more children and grow a family, but she's the one that handled the filing, and I had to bring that on. That was actually a challenge. That was hard for me because you have to think in a different side of your brain. I was always very creative. I didn't find this creative at all. But when I said, well, wait a minute, let's just take a different look at this. You know, how can we use the filing portion now that I have to do it myself in between assistants? And so I just said, okay, well, I can use it as downtime so that I can just relax and fill these forms out and make them the best they can be. And so that's how I integrated actual law, components of law into what I do.
Well, you mentioned your wife in the entertainment business, and I just happen to know this about you, and it's one of my favorite things about you, and that is that you actually worked for the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus.
I did.
So, and I mean, we've had such a fun time integrating that into your new brand. It's just such a part of your creative and joyful soul, and I mean, was that a life dream for you to join the circus? I've literally never met anybody who actually worked in the circus, and I just adore that about you. So was it your dream, and how did you do it? And I know it has to have contributed to your skill set that you bring into your mediation practice.
Well, you know, this goes back to how do we choose our careers? No, I'd never seen a circus. I knew of the circus. I grew up in America, so I knew there were circuses. I was actually a performing musician. From the time I was 10 years old, I played flute. I then, when I went to high school, went into competitions, joined chamber orchestras, community orchestras. So it looked like I should go into entertainment when I graduated from high school. But when you go to college, you're all of a sudden in a different melting pot, and the skill sets are at a different level. And then you compare yourself to people and say, I don't know, maybe this isn't the exact right thing for me. So I decided that I wasn't going to be a performer or a teacher, and I didn't know what I wanted to be. I did know that I had other skill sets, like communications, live communication skill sets, journalistic skill sets. I could write. I had an interest in literature. I thought I could teach, but believe me, that's not my skill set. Although, I majored in a whole bunch of things: journalism, communication, English literature, education, philosophy, and music. Before I graduated, my dad sat me down. This is how it worked. And he said, I'm okay with you changing majors. This is when I was leaving the music school. He said, I'm okay with you changing majors. I want you to do exactly what you want to do for a living. But what do you want to do? Do you have any idea what you want to do? And I thought for a minute and I said, I cannot name the exact job I would like to have. But I can say this, I want to work with as many cultures of people in the world humanly possible, and I want to work in as many places in the world possible too. And that's all I know. And he accepted it. And you know, Tracy, that's so weird. I can go back. I remember it was in my college dorm room. He was sitting talking with me, And I don't know where that came from. But we all have that inside of us. If we just dig deep, if we just stop thinking and start feeling a little bit, I think we can get ourselves to the place we need to be next. So I had no idea what that meant. Graduated from college. About 2 years after graduation, after poking around in a couple different jobs, I read the newspaper, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. That's where I grew up, and that's where I was living at the time. And in those days, you could see ads for jobs, and there were actual phone numbers for human beings that would pick up the phone and interview you.
And actually talk to you as a human being. Yes.
That's right.
Wonderful.
And actually talk to you as a human being. And that we're so missing that now with the way people apply for jobs. And I don't think it services the company or the candidate, but that's the topic for another.
That's another episode we'll do together.
Believe me. But anyway, so I'm reading the Post-Gazette, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and there it was, Tracy. Circus, circus. See the country. And every single qualification they were looking for was almost every major that I had majored in. Entertainment, journalism, communications. They wanted you to be a good writer. They wanted you to be organized. And I read this and I said, well, this is my job. I mean, this is it. There's no question. I was interviewed in April of 1980 by Tim Stinson, the marketing director of the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus. And my sister even said, well, you got this one. This is you. You are that weird that you need to be working with us. And I considered that a compliment.
It is. I love weird. And I do think it's, you know, I don't want to lose sight of one of the first things that you said, which is that the only thing that you knew was you wanted to work with a lot of diverse cultures and people and see as much of the world as possible. I don't think those were your exact words, but that's my paraphrase. And that is really cutting edge for 30 plus years ago. I mean, that you hear that from millennials all day long now. That is what they aspire to be, whether they make a job out of it or not. But in 1980, like, that was really cutting edge because women at that point in time were just starting to, quote unquote, break the glass ceiling. And that's when we had to cut our hair and wear our navy heels and our suit. And it was like, I felt like we had to kind of fall into this new definition of bringing home the bacon and cooking it up in a pan or whatever. And you were so, I think it was a renegade at that time that you stepped out of that.
Well, let me clarify. That conversation happened in 1972 when I was a sophomore in college.
Whoa.
I mean, I told you I was ancient. And so fast forward to 1980. So I graduated from college in 75 and then did some jobs. And then, yes, it was, I guess it was 1980 that the circus opportunity came up. So here's my message to everybody listening. It doesn't happen overnight. You may have this vision or this feeling that you come up with and it makes sense, but it's not in your life right now. You have to live a little bit more. You have to experience a little bit more in order to recognize what's right for you. And then you know it when you know it.
It's like a relationship too. It's like people say you'll know when you know, and if you've never known, then you don't know yet. So
that's right. That's exactly
that
right.
Person, the only way to be able to explain it is to experience it. Oh, I just think that there's so many life lessons it feels like that you've learned through these experiences. How do those life lessons then work for you in the field of divorce?
Okay, so the circus was the greatest job I could have ever had, bar none, hands down. I was in heaven every single day. What I loved about the circus when I was a marketing director and a tour booking agent and a location scout, because I did all of that in advance of the show, I enjoyed getting to know all the different families, where they came from, what their cultures were about, and of course, how they came to be performers in the circus. But when I was the dancing bear, the year that I married Clark Weigel, the band leader of the circus, who I had met in front of the hot dog stand on the Midway, the very first day I was on the circus in 1980. Wait a second, I lost my train of thought. What was I saying?
About the life lessons from the circus.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that. I actually went back to the hot dog stand all of a sudden and relived that
meeting.
You were
back with Clark on the first day. Yes. And by the way, listeners, if you want to see a picture of Judith in her dancing bear costume, you can see that on her new website. So we'll show you how to do that later. But anyway, because everybody needs to see the picture of you as the dancing bear to make it, this story is such a romantic fairy tale in itself that you kind of have to see it to believe it.
It almost feels like that, you know, it really, really does. Well, I even learned more when I was the dancing bear and we got a trailer because everybody lived in a trailer. This was an outdoor tented show. It doesn't exist anymore. It was an outdoor tented show of three rings. It sat 4,000 people, so pretty big for an outdoor show. And all the performers had their own truck and trailer. And we moved to three different cities in a week. We traveled overnight after the last show, Tuesday night, Thursday night, and Sunday night. And then you had your certain place that you parked around the tent when you got to the new town. I learned so much more just by being integrated into this multicultural society. And one of the things I would like to share with people, because it kind of comes up in divorce, and it's money. And it's about the way people are either defined by money by third parties or the way we define ourselves by money. The lowest on the totem pole in the circus were the roustabouts. And it is true that the roustabouts had very difficult pasts. Quite a few came from prison. Quite a few were running away from going to prison. So we had this cadre of people that did the menial task of following the elephant, laying down the tent, putting poles up underneath the tent, putting rigging together, and, you know, just doing those menial tasks. Well, when I would walk around during the day after we put the tent up, after the jobs were done, I would actually see these men reading. And I would say, well, what are you reading? And that would start conversations with them. And I would then get to know who they were as individuals, not defined by career, not defined by how much money they had, but just defined in what they could contribute to the health and welfare of this macro family called the circus. I love that.
So powerful. I love that.
I love that I was given that opportunity. Go ahead.
You know, being, I mean, of the circus and the aspect of a family, you literally had to exist and be a diplomat and a cheerleader and all kinds of different roles that you played in engaging and being amicable within this family, the circus. So, of course, that naturally transitions to what you do today as a mediator in family law.
Right. And we could even kind of move this and look at co-parenting. So in co-parenting, it's the relationship that exists once the divorce is final, right? And you have to get along. I mean, for the sake of your children, you have to get along. So if you go back to the circus, and people didn't see eye to eye on things. I mean, we had different cultural backgrounds and hierarchies of gender and just ways that you treated people. What was culturally acceptable in one culture was not culturally acceptable in another. But we really had to get to the most humanistic part of what it was we were doing. And we were putting on a show for people. We were putting on a show for other people's families with other children. And we had to be a model of what it was we were doing, which is happily sharing our lives with you, sharing our skills and talents with you. And that that set me up for all of my other work in entertainment, and it set me up for divorce, and I use circus metaphors a lot in divorce. And I did it when I was introducing you. I want to show people how to get divorced with the greatest of ease. What I left off was on the flying trapeze.
Well, yeah, I believe that everybody has a book in them. I believe that everybody has a story, which is one of the reasons why I love having conversations like we're having today. Have you ever thought about writing a book about the circus or being in the circus?
I did. As a matter of fact, I did. I wrote a book, and it was 2005. I decided at that point, I think I want to just be a speaker. I just want to talk for a living. No idea about podcasting. And I really
to your defense, there weren't really that popular at that point in time when you made that decision. They were just kind of coming back around.
Well, thank you for that. And I don't know why I didn't.
Just getting started, actually, I should say.
Yeah, because I was reading about the history of it, and I was even surprised at how far back it goes. I really was.
Yeah. And we can thank Steve Jobs for how popular they are today, because he made them easier to access. That's why there was that lull between the early 2000s and 2013, 2014, because Steve Jobs put the app on the iPod, and then we were off to the races.
And so Apple is the biggest platform, Tracy, for podcast delivery. Is it still?
It is today, but depending on when your listeners will be listening to this episode down the road, Spotify is definitely coming on very strong. But we literally can attribute the success of podcasting and your ability to podcast and for people to find you so easily on podcast platforms to putting that microphone icon onto the iPod. That's what brought it back. Otherwise they were so difficult to find and discover.
And discover too. Okay. I totally understand that. Well, I was actually just thinking in the field of public speaking, because I do like live audiences. And again, my experience is live entertainment. So that's really what I was thinking of is, well, I got to write a book in order to do speaking engagements. And so what do you write about? Well, the thing that is your bailiwick and your unique selling point and the thing I loved more than anything was the circus. What I tried to communicate was, I guess, what I do in divorce, and that is the power of communication, the power of words, the power of the sound of your voice, and how it can soothe or worsen a situation.
Or even agitate in some cases, unfortunately.
You know, absolutely. And so when I'm in the divorce mediations with people, I say it's the words we choose and the tone of voice we use that will make your mediation better or worse. Okay, that sounds great, right? But to really process and be able to do it back, it takes a little bit of practice. And so in my first mediations with people, it's really about showing them how to communicate. It's not like you're at the kitchen table in your own home, or you wouldn't be in the mediation. If you could resolve a settlement dispute amongst yourselves in your house, you wouldn't need me. You need me because you really don't know how to get to where you need to be in your settlement.
Exactly.
And that's why you need a mediator. So that's yes. What I try and do is show people how to communicate. So the book is really, the book is called, My Office is a Three-Ring Circus. The subtitle, Must I Take Orders from Clowns? Well, that subtitle can be used anywhere, any place, under any circumstances, because not one person wants to take orders from clowns, right?
No, never. I mean, I think that's why we become entrepreneurs, that we might be the clowns, but at least we are taking orders from ourselves. I've often said sometimes if I were my boss, I probably would have fired me by now, but that's okay.
I wouldn't have fired you, Tracy. I would definitely never fire you.
Oh my gosh. Well, as a fellow podcaster, I would be completely remiss if I didn't ask you just about the podcast itself and how did it come to life and what do you love about podcasting?
I love that I get to express myself verbally, that I get to move people's hearts, that I get to calm people down, and that I get to show people a different way of dealing with this really big task called divorce. I love interviewing people. I like bringing judges, attorneys, authors, therapists to the table. I just love the conversations that I have with them. I could get lost in these conversations. And I know that it's to the benefit of everybody listening. It's not fluff. I mean, I try and have a little bit of a little bit of fun every now and then, but my podcasts, my episodes are full of information. And I want you to leave each episode better off than when you turned it on.
You know, in with my company, Producer Podcast, one of the things and what we're built on is the two principles. One is that your voice matters. And secondly, is that it gives you the opportunity to change the conversation in your industry. And what I love about what you're doing is that you're creating these conversations and you really are changing that conversation to a place of positivity, to a place of hope, to a place of like the just that you encourage people to know and believe that divorce is a new beginning. So if there are people that are listening to your podcast who are struggling with the idea of whether or not they should or shouldn't get divorced, you provide them this really amazing content around how to do that amicably, and you reduce the fear and you encourage the life change and remove the fear piece of that and replace it with possibilities. And I really think that the vehicle of podcasting and how you use it has such a wonderful ripple effect, not only to people who may be thinking about it, going through it, or have been through it, but has a mother or a brother or a sister or a best friend who is in a situation where they might be embarking on the aspect of divorce, and they can use your information as a resource to share with them. So it's extremely powerful what you do with the Amicable Divorce Expert podcast.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really do. And I do think people need a place to go where they can just breathe and know that their time spent is going to be justifiable and beneficial and all of that. And there are a lot of other divorce podcasts. I know that. And they all have their own little individual niche. And I guess I go back to the way I got to the new title, Amicable Divorce Expert, because I'm not hearing anybody else do what I want to do. And that is to change your heart, change the way you speak, change the tone of your voice, and watch miracles happen. And it really is the power of communication in this most difficult area called divorce, where communication is at its lowest ebb. It couldn't get worse. That's why we're getting divorced. We don't communicate anymore. We don't communicate in terms of what we like to do together. We don't communicate intimately. We don't communicate verbally well. You know, that is the breakdown of the marriage, unless it's just you just evolved out of each other. But even that is a breakdown in communication. You don't necessarily have to argue, just silence, long periods, days of silence where you don't connect, you don't speak to one another. There's a really good marker. Maybe you better reevaluate your relationship, because relationships are about communication, are they not? I mean, you have a wonderful marriage right now. I know you do. I listen to the way you talk about, I mean, I don't live with you, but.
I'm very, very blessed though, but I also have gratitude around the relationship, and I do feel very blessed, but I also know that I worked extremely hard on myself and learning how to communicate better and being able to have conversations that I'm always amicable to the degree of a fault almost. And so standing up for myself was always hard. And I just finally, I did so much work on myself before I met my husband, there were 10 years in between my first marriage and my, what I call my last marriage. And there was a lot of soul searching and, you know, not in some duds too, I'm not going to lie, in that 10 year period. But I believe that if we can work on ourselves and learn better communication skills, it won't be helpful just in your marriage, but it'll be helpful in all of your relationships. And that's what I love what you talk about, because you're focused on divorce, but helping people resolve situations amicably is a wonderful gift that you can give anybody, because we all are struggling with conversations about how to get a promotion, or how to stay married versus getting divorced, or co-parenting, or talking with our kids and doing that in a way that doesn't escalate. So what you're teaching people, even though they're getting, and you said you weren't a teacher at the beginning of this episode, but I say au contraire, because as someone is going through a divorce, that might be the practical use of why they hire you. But what they take away from that is an entirely new skill set of how to live their life. And that is a wonderful blessing that you can bestow on people.
You know, the thing about being, thank you very much for that. The thing about being a teacher, okay, I can't teach little kids. Little kids entertain me too much. And I'm the worst. So I had fourth, fifth, and sixth graders for one semester only, about a year out of college. And we all came to the same realization, I think, at the same time. The principal, me, and the children. I'm not the right teacher. And so when
so much fun.
That's well, that was it.
You want to play with them.
Well, that's what the kids said to me. So we had a going away party. We had a series of going away parties at the elementary school that day, my last day. And each class brought in presents that you would only get at a wedding. I mean, they were significant gifts, crystal, this, that. And I'm like, holy heck, you didn't have to do this. And they said, look, we really liked you. You were like the best person we've ever met, but you are so not a teacher. You're supposed to get mad at us. You're supposed to be strict with us. Ergo, Tracy, why I have cats, not kids. I just, it just revolted on me if I had my own children. So I remained a child.
Yes, and I do, as your producer, I do need to acknowledge your creativity in how, when we decided to work together on this podcast, everything about the way that you branded the open and close of your show was all you, and Beck and Eliza Lovett, who recorded those precious voices on your podcast, they're so fabulous. But I mean, we agreed to disagree, which I love about being amicable. You and I agreed to disagree. I was like, oh, I couldn't hear it in my head, but you had such a clear vision of how it would sound, and it's amazing. And so we have to give a little shout out to Beck and Eliza. But I mean, you saw that, you created it, and you manifested that happening. And that is, again, your right brain and your left brain exist so well and combine so well in what you do for your business. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you for that. And may I tell everybody that Tracy brought Eliza and Beck to the table. Once I said, we put out the cattle call for different voiceovers, and I'm like, no, 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 no. These are too campy. This isn't really a circus. We're just referencing a little bit to put some color in here. And what are circuses for? They're for children. And I thought, well, nobody has a child introduce their podcast, that this would be the perfect setting for it. And you picked the perfect people. And I just adored them. The second I heard them, that was it. Done. Let me write the script for them. I know what they're going to do. And I didn't even stumble. Didn't matter.
Oh, yes. They did have an interesting time with the word amicable, but they got through it. But, you know, but in all seriousness, because this is, it's a serious podcast that you've infused your personality and your love for fun into, but children are the most impacted by divorce. And so when I've connected the dots on how powerful it is for the children to be having a voice in your podcast, that's when I really, like, I went from being, I just don't know how this is going to sound, to, of course the children need a voice. Like, your voice matters. Children's voices matter in divorce. And that's such a beautiful way of bringing that message into your business and into your podcast in a joyful, positive way.
Thank you for all of that. I really do hope that that works on everybody listening too, because, you know, one of the toughest things, the toughest thing is the co-parenting. There is no question, hands down, especially, I mean, on a good day when you're not divorced and you're in the same house raising your children, you don't see eye to eye. You know, and that's okay. You just have to kind of come to the middle and make parental rules and philosophies for your children to follow. But when you're getting divorced and now you have to co-parent, you still have to resolve those issues that brought you to divorce while you're trying to make it as normal as possible for your children. And children don't have a divorce, have a voice. You know, when children have a voice, it's horrifying when they have to go to court. Little ones don't get to go to court. They don't want to. And then even when you're an adolescent, I mean, it's not really where you want to be. You don't want to talk negatively about either parent normally. And so I just think that having that child's voice at the beginning and close is a great bookend to them.
And it's a nice reminder to the parents. Them. And I love, because you say, be kind to yourself, be kind to your spouse. Like, it's, I mean, it's the children saying, hey, be kind to us.
And people, you know, Tracy, people don't really understand what it means to be kind to your children. They're in so much pain getting divorced, and they have so much on their plate that they have to deal with, that to understand what it means to not use your children as messengers, you almost have to go through examples of your kids saying, stop doing that, Mom. Stop doing that, Dad. I don't want to be in the middle. You force your kids to come to that point. And even then, if you haven't figured out a way to talk to your spouse, it's hard to keep yourself from using your children as messengers. But it's actually a law. You're not supposed to use your children as messengers, believe it or not. It's in our settlement agreement.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you one other thing that comes into play that's so difficult for people. My heart goes out to them. But it's one of the things that all of the professionals, I think, in our industry really have to speak towards with their clients. And that is when you want to form other relationships, because people who like being in relationships are going to form other relationships.
Of course.
Got to take care of those kids first. Do not get into another relationship that you want to introduce to your child while you're still getting divorced. People just don't understand that everybody, all children take different amounts of time to heal, to get used to this co-parenting schedule, this visitation schedule, two households. I mean, they're going through so much trauma, even though it may be quieter to have two households. If there's a lot of fighting, that may be good at people getting divorced. Having two households is not the worst thing in the world, but it's how we create this new family environment that's super difficult.
Right. Well, I know that has to be one of the most difficult aspects of what you do. And those are great messages for people who are going through divorce who have children. Are there any other messages that you might want to share to anyone who might be preparing for a divorce?
Make sure you're clear about the reasons, not only what you contributed to the exit out of the relationship. You're clear about what your spouse did. You could talk about that all day. But what did you do? And I'm not saying that not every situation is completely a two-way street, but generally it is. Generally. And so really,
everybody has a part in something. You have to see your part.
Either you chose the wrong person to marry, you didn't pay attention to the warning signs, or you just changed maybe once you got married? Because, I mean, you've been married twice now. I've been married once. There is a little bit of a shift. The shift once we get married either is an upward shift and it feels even better than the day before we got married, or it's, I think I made a mistake. And that happens. One of those two things happen immediately. You know, so just be careful, be very self-aware, and blaming will get you nowhere. Blaming is lighting a match to your settlement. Stop the blaming. Just put it aside. Deal with reality. Deal with the things that you have to make decisions on. Do the best you can. Get legal advice. And be as nice as you can. You're not a loser if you're nice. That's actually your way of gaining power, because nobody expects you to be nice. But being nice is your secret little weapon. Again, amicable. That's your secret
weapon. And it just feels so much better when you think about how much energy it goes into being nasty versus being nice and kind. It's just like it literally physically feels better just to be nice. But that is hard for somebody in certain situations. I get it. But, you know, I love that. It's like being kind is your secret weapon. That needs to be like, we need to start. Now we're going into the expanding the podcast into merch lines with all these great sayings that you have. And, you know, I mean, because I can see why you're so good at what you do, because it's just calming to even hear you explain these things. I can't imagine when someone's in turmoil and trauma and shock and pain, how much they must benefit from having an ally like you.
Thank you. I was there myself, and it's not hard to bring that back. Tracy, we're at the end of our time. This has been an absolute delight to meet me and for me to talk with you, because you know I adore you and everything that you do. Now, in the event that anybody listening would like to start their own podcast, how do they get in touch with you?
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for asking. So you can go to produceyourpodcast.com, and I make it super easy. If you want to have a conversation with me, you can literally click a button and you can call me, or you can set up a call, and it's not a sales pitch. It's just a conversation about podcasting and whether or not it would be a fit. And so either of those two options, but produceyourpodcast.com. And how about people getting in touch with you?
And people can get in touch with me by my email, judith@theamicabledivorceexpert.com. judith@theamicabledivorceexpert.com. But if you really would like to get a California divorce, please go to my other website, which is divorceresourceinc.com. divorceresourceinc.com. And I hope everybody got a lot of benefit out of this episode. I look forward to speaking to all of you next week.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.